At the end of 2021, Governor Kathy Hochul delivered some bad news for New York's public libraries, vetoing legislation they had supported, which would amend state law with the intention of making electronic book materials more accessible to patrons all over the state. To discuss the vetoed bill and what comes next, we're checking in with Bree McNamee, Director of Government Relations and Advocacy for the New York Library Association. Welcome back to the show, Bree.
Yeah, thank you so much. Good morning.
And also joining us is Caroline Ashby, Director of the Nassau Library System on Long Island. Hello, Caroline.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So, Caroline, can you explain, I guess, broadly speaking, the goal of this ebook legislation and the problem that you're trying to address with it?
What we hoped to address with the legislation was ensuring that every New Yorker would have access to every ebook that was available to them on the consumer market. That libraries would also have the ability to offer those same titles to the public. And, you know, on the larger scale, our goal is to ensure the sustainability of libraries going forward. The issues related to ebooks really impact us both today and further down the line, and we see trends towards more and more of our patrons reading ebooks, and we see trends from publishers restricting access to ebooks. And we want to make sure that going forward, libraries are able to continue with their long-held, centuries-old mission to make sure that knowledge, culture, and all of the materials that are required for learning can be shared and preserved for all going forward.
And when we talk about ebooks, is this simply the books that we know and love traditionally in some sort of paperback or hardcover format just being consumed on some sort of electronic device, like maybe a tablet or a phone?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's new books as well. So it's the classics and the books that are coming out this week as well.
And so then what are some of the barriers you're seeing right now from the publishing industry that is preventing libraries from offering the full range of ebook materials that, like you said, you can buy as a consumer?
So one thing that is generally surprising to the public is that with a print book, we can go to Barnes & Noble and we can purchase a copy of that book for a library. We can purchase it from anyone who's selling a copy of the ebook. But with a digital book, it's only available as a license to us. So we never own anything. We are licensing the rights to distribute the text of the book or the sound of the audiobook to our public. We never own a copy of it. We just license a copy of it. And so all of the rights that come along with owning the copy and being able to distribute it to whoever you want, whenever you want, are not available to us in the digital model. And that's okay. We get that digital is a little bit different. But publishers generally impose some restrictions on libraries that people aren't always aware of. So, for example, our licenses for ebooks generally expire after 1 or 2 years, or sometimes after a certain number of checkouts, generally about 26 checkouts. Whereas with a print book, we own that book until we decide it no longer serves our public or until somebody spills coffee on it and we can't lend it out anymore. But with a digital book, the publishers decide when we stop having access to that book. At the same time, we're paying more for a copy of that ebook than the general public is. So with a paperback or a hardcover print book, libraries pay the same price that a member of the general public would pay if they walked into a shop and purchased a copy of that book. But on the digital side, for an ebook or audiobook, we're generally paying 2 to 3 times the list price that a consumer would pay for the exact same content. Plus, we have these added restrictions where we can only lend it to one person at a time, which makes sense. That mimics what's true in the physical realm. But again, those books more or less self-destruct after 12 months or 24 months or 26 checkouts.
And are there other restrictions in terms of when you have access to ebooks or whether certain publishers are even willing to sell you ebooks or license you ebooks, so to speak?
That was really the catalyst for this legislation. In 2019, one of the big five publishers in the U.S., Macmillan, announced that starting in early 2020, they were only going to allow libraries to purchase one copy of the ebook version of their new titles for the first 6 months of publication. So So if a new book came out, even if it was by the most popular author, libraries could only purchase one copy to serve their public for those first 6 months. So in the case of my system, our ebook consortium serves 1.3 million people. So for one of the biggest five publishers, for those first 6 months, we were only going to have access to one ebook copy. To put that in perspective, in my county, in Nassau County, in 2019, when that was announced, we had 1.1 million ebook checkouts through our library system that year. This year, it's almost twice that. It's 1.85 million checkouts. But even then, 1.1 million checkouts in a population serving a population of 1.3 million people, and this publisher was telling us we could only have access to one ebook copy of this title for the first 6 months. So we saw the writing on the wall there. Those practices were really going to threaten the sustainability of libraries going forward if other publishers picked up that practice, but also access for all. There are a ton of people that rely on ebooks through libraries for a couple of different reasons, one of which is large print accessibility. So a lot of books are not available in large print or not available at first in large print on the consumer market. But if you have a device like an e-reader or even your mobile phone, you can enlarge the text on an ebook to whatever is comfortable for you. You can often change the contrast, have white on black or black on white, change from a serif to a non-serif font. So there are a ton of accessibility enhancements available with an ebook that are not available with a print book.
Can you convert it to Wingding?
If anybody can read Wingding, I would like to meet them.
Okay. Just thought, you know, we're an equal opportunity show here, so I just wanted to make sure that was something we're thinking about. Turning to the legislation that was vetoed, what of those burdens or barriers that you're coming up against would be addressed? Is it simply about addressing the cost issue? Is it about the accessibility concerns? What would this legislation have done?
Sure. So the legislation was really talking to the publishers, making sure that they would provide those titles that Caroline was talking about under reasonable terms. But what we really tried to do is we tried to provide some latitude in what I like to call the gray zone for those publishers still to be able to operate and make a profit. So we made sure that those reasonable terms could include that limitation on the number of users who can use, you know, that title, a limitation on the number of days that a library may provide that user with access. So we really did try to make sure that the publisher and the private market could still operate, still make a profit, but yet we could really make sure that we had access to those titles, new and old, in the immediate, and make sure that members of our general public had access to the information that they need and deserve.
The mission, as we've sort of talked about with regards to libraries, is about the broad distribution of these materials. But ebooks, while they're growing in popularity, are limited to a certain degree in terms of who can access them. So why are libraries focusing on ebooks? And is it at the detriment of more, I guess, egalitarian materials like physical books that people could access regardless of what technology they have access to?
I think I'll answer this, and I'd love to pass it on to Caroline and,
sure,
and get her reaction too. I mean, my thought is not that we are trying to usurp or put one type of access point over another. I mean, libraries in their physical form and their infrastructure will continue to exist and, of course, bring in those titles and many others. Those collections are absolutely enormous and curated. But as far as those who enjoy the electronic format, and as Caroline had mentioned, maybe in different sort of accessibility standpoint, like those larger prints, they'll be able to access them in an electronic format. But obviously, we don't want to just focus on that digital, because as we know, in New York State, we still do have that digital divide. But libraries are trying to address that as well.
Caroline, did you want to add something?
Yeah, absolutely. I think libraries have always been format agnostic. We follow our residents and our public and see what devices and the ways that they're consuming media and information. But there are also some trends on the publisher and production side of things that really impact this as well. There is a ton of content that is only available in the digital sphere right now. So there are Audible exclusive audiobooks that are only available to subscribers of Audible. There are a ton of streaming media content, like The Mandalorian, for example, that are only available to subscribers of Disney Plus and other subscription video models. And so forever, if a film or a book was available on the consumer market, libraries would be able to make a purchase of that item so that it could be available to anyone who wasn't able to access it in the theater or from the bookstore or wherever. But right now, that's not always possible. Like I said, there are ebooks being distributed through Audible that libraries cannot purchase and cannot get out to the public. So unless you have a subscription to Audible and you have a credit card and are able to afford it, you're not able to access that content whatsoever, and libraries will never be able to get it to you. The same is true for so much video right now that is only being released through proprietary subscriptions on Netflix or Amazon or Hulu. And it's a trend that seems to be accelerating, and it does really threaten the sustainability of libraries going forward if our mission is to preserve access and preserve the, you know, be good stewards of the cultural record. There is going to be a ton of content that we will never be able to make available.
So how do you respond to the concern espoused from opponents of this bill that it would have undermined a legal framework that ensures we have a constant flow of original works being creative? I mean, do you think this would have been to the detriment of the creative community? Would this remove incentives for people to create and promote and publish new material?
Absolutely not. You know, many of our publishers and new authors and small shops, as I like to call them, they're just using ebooks, and libraries want to make sure that we're providing that content to as large of an audience as possible without any type of censorship whatsoever. So the argument that, of course, that this bill would have conflicted with the Federal Copyright Act by forcing publishers, you know, to make their literary works available to libraries, I think it was a reach, and I think it was a gut reaction from a private marketplace holder. That's just my reaction. I don't know what Caroline's thoughts are.
Authors and creators are heroes to librarians. We want them to do well. We need them to do well. We want them to create the next best story so that we can consume it and learn from it. Libraries are here to promote reading. It's a shared goal between authors, publishers, and libraries. We buy a lot of books. We give authors a lot of visibility. We give them free marketing. We have book discussions about their material. We have author events where we bring them in to talk to our patrons. We are a big part of the ecosystem that keeps authors and publishers going, and we want to be part of that. We want to help promote them and lift them up. And we're also willing to pay for the materials. We're not looking for a handout. We're not trying to get access to content for free. We're just trying to get access to content for as many of the people that we serve as possible.
This bill wouldn't have set the cost specifically of ebook licensing moving forward, and instead would have required good faith negotiations, which seems like a murky standard. So would this have definitely cleaned up the licensing process, or could it have made things more complicated?
There's always that unintended consequence, you know, that you're living in the gray area. But I think for us, I mean, just having the precedent in law, making it known that there is this issue and that libraries do want to work hand in hand with publishers, and again, just pointing out that what reasonable terms could be. But absolutely, we were not looking to put a dollar figure on anything. I think that would have been crossing the line of the legislature, certainly.
So circling back to the Mandalorian reference that Caroline made earlier, speaking of the Disney Plus Star Wars show, I'm kind of intrigued by how you would go about licensing something like that, considering it's not available for purchase as a DVD, and you have to pay a monthly subscription service to Disney Plus in this case. to access the material. So how would you go about figuring out the price of something like that? Would you try to follow that previous DVD model? Would you assume how long it might take to watch something and base it off that sort of subscription model? So if, you know, if it's two seasons, maybe it takes 2 months, so you spend that much. So how do you wrap your head around something like that?
As Bree mentioned, the ebooks for All Bill was silent on the cost of materials. And again, we leave it to publishers and creators to determine what's fair. For us, it's really about access. There are a couple of library vendors that are moving to a cost per circulation model, like the video provider Hoopla. So we can provide streaming video to our users, whereby if a patron checks out an item and watches a video, the library pays a certain fee per circulation of that video. So per the number of per view, I guess it's more of a pay-per-view model where we pay a set flat fee for every time one of our patrons use that material. So that's one possibility for streaming media going forward.
Well, Bree, thinking about the future, what is the fate of this bill for the 2022 legislative session? Will lawmakers at the behest of the Library Association drive through the exact same bill and hope for new results when it gets to the governor? Or are you planning on making some sort of amendments that reflect some of the critiques raised by opponents as well as espoused in the governor's veto message?
First, I feel like I need to use this platform to answer some, you know, requests from the library community, both in New York State and beyond, you know, and that's about the override. And I don't think that's going to be on the table for lots of reasons, but the major one is the two houses haven't successfully overridden any veto since I think it was like 2006.
Yeah,
so that's absolutely not a possibility. So I think our plan right now is sort of twofold. The first is working with our sponsors. We want to refile it for introduction, you know, for 2022 and inquire with the executive if there are reasonable tweaks that we could make to make it more palatable from their perspective. We're also working with our partners at the American Library Association because while this issue is obviously pertinent within New York State, it is a nationwide issue for our public libraries. Ultimately, I think the bill's viability, at least in its current form, is going to be contingent on that pending litigation in Maryland, which we haven't really spoken about. In a perfect world, if that suit goes the way we would like it to, that would provide some reassurance to the governor that New York State won't also be sued upon enacting similar legislation. But as all of us on this call know, courts don't exactly act swiftly, so we don't know if that decision is going to occur within the next few months, or are we going to be waiting a few years? So again, that's why we're really working with our partners at the American Library Association to see maybe there's an alternative method to address this issue and make sure that both the publishers and libraries can really work in harmony.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Bree McNamee. She's the Director of Government Relations and Advocacy for the New York Library Association, and Caroline Ashby, Director of the Nassau Library System on Long Island. Bree and Caroline, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much, David.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.